And I'm joined now by a former Royal and a former Wichita State Shocker. We've had him on the program before. We always enjoy talking to him. Funny guy, good guy, Jamie Bluma. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you guys?
Doing good. And let's just jump into it. You, I think, of all people, would be a good guy to talk to about this, and this is why I wanted you on the show today. The Royals bullpen, we've seen them go up and down. You were a bullpen guy, a closer, a setup reliever in your time. And the bullpen early in the year really struggled. Then in July, they were fantastic. And no coincidence, the Royals really took off, had a good July. And then in August, they've really struggled. What have you seen from this bullpen? Were you concerned about the bullpen going into the season? And based on those ups and downs, why do you think the Royals have been so inconsistent with that bullpen and why they're struggling now?
I was concerned a little bit going into spring training, just because we're so used to the bullpen that we had 14 and 15. And 16 for the most part, with losing those pieces and Holland and Davis and a couple other guys, they were historically good, not just for us, but just in general. So, you know, a little bit of concern going into the season. And then, you know what, a little bit of struggle right out of the gate. Strom struggled as a guy that we were hoping to be a guy, and now he's since not even in the organization anymore. That's how quickly things can change. And then everybody else kind of settled into their roles. We had McCarthy, and we got Moylan doing what he's supposed to be doing. Soria and Herrera, you know, have had their shakiness, but as a whole, been pretty good. I think the biggest problem is we're starting pitching not getting real deep most of the year. Now that you get into the dog days of August and September, maybe some guys getting a little worn on the tires, getting a little bit of tired. You see Soria. Now he's battling a little bit of an injury, I guess, was trying to pitch through it. We learned a little bit today. And you just don't want those games when we hit three home runs in the eighth inning and then they come back and beat us to cost us, because I think this is going to come right down to it. You know, a half game here and a half game there in the wild card standings. You know, it may be 84, 85, 86 wins is going to end up getting a spot in the playoffs, and those things hurt. When the offense does a good job late, we've seen a lot of that from this team where the offense, you know, picks it up and does some things late in the game, and that's the ones that you want to make sure that you lock down. Another big comeback win yesterday. Just tough. I mean, everybody's changed roles a little bit. You tried to kept it all year where it's, you know, Soria in the eighth and Herrera in the ninth. Herrera had a little bit of trouble with home runs early in the season, but he's been pretty good. He's not been Wade Davis and Greg Holland good, but he's been serviceable, and he's still got good stuff, and he's really, you know, the pressure's tougher when people expect you to go out and do it as a closer versus, not that the outs are any different in the seventh and eighth inning, but people's eyes are really on you when you're in the ninth, and he struggled a little bit with that, but as a whole been pretty good. We just need to make sure, you know, as we get to this part of the season, you know, wins are at a premium. Wins now mean all the world just as much as they did, you know, a month ago. That one win that we didn't get in July is just as much as important now. But now everybody's scoreboard watching from here on out, and it's going to be, you know, whoever gets hot late. And we've seen this team can get hot and go through a good winning streak, playing pretty good on the road right now. We get a tough team against Cleveland coming home. We got Kluber right out of the gate. But Kennedy's matched up pretty well, and that's been pretty good his last four or five starts.
Jamie Bluma, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs. You make a really good point, and I'm glad you did, and that is, we were just talking about the bullpen woes and some of the moves that Dayton Moore has made here since they won the World Series in 2015, to where this bullpen is not what it once was. And certainly you can be somewhat lazy and say, as a fan, well, Holland's having an unbelievable year with Colorado. Wade Davis is really good with the Cubs. And if we just keep those guys, we still have HDH, so forth and so on. Well, there's money comes into it. Tommy John surgery for Holland, missed all of last year. Davis had a few injuries to deal with last year. But I want to get back to something you said, and that was starting pitching not going deep in games. I want to give you this line here. Danny Duffy, who is the Royals' ace, or supposed to be, Danny Duffy, his last six starts, has gone five innings, six and a third. He did have one good one where he went seven in a 2-1 loss to Baltimore. 5 2/3, 6 1/3, and 5 innings yesterday against Oakland and got a high pitch count. Jason Hamill can't seem to get through the 6th inning, so you got to have to go to the bullpen for 3 or 4 innings every time he pitches. Jason Vargas is really pretty much a 6-inning guy at best, although every once in a while he'll have one of those where he can go 7, 8, 9 for you, but pretty rare. Ian Kennedy, as we know, doesn't go deep in the game, so usually he has some issues. 3rd time through the order, 6th inning. How much does that affect the bullpen? Because it's easy for fans to say, well, the bullpen stinks. The bullpen's blowing everything in August, especially last 2 games they've blown the leads. But when you keep having to get these guys, not only do they come into the game, Jamie, as you know, but when they got to get hot, and then all of a sudden they don't come in. That they're still throwing pitches and trying to get warm to come in. How hard is that on a bullpen guy? You should know. You did it yourself.
It's hard, man, and we call that, I mean, pardon the term, but we call that a dry hump. When you're in the bullpen and you get loose and you don't get into the game, that gets to be frustrating because those pitches count from a physical standpoint. You look at the back of a guy's baseball card or you look at the statistics and you see that he maybe threw in, you know, say 60 games. Well, I'm sure in at least 75 games, there's probably 15 games throughout the course of 162 where, hey, there's a situation where you got to get up, got to get hot, and we don't get you in the game. Ned's done a great job, and he's had a great staff to be able to, most of the time, when he gets guys loose, they get in the game, and they try to do a great job of getting their job done. But over the course of the season, when you got, and I don't know what our, I haven't looked at the numbers to see where our starting pitching falls as far as amount of innings thrown, but I'm sure it's got to be in the bottom third of the league, and that has to, that's eventually going to take its toll. And you've had a bunch of different guys come through that bullpen throughout the course of the year. I know you'll look at the roster at the end of the season on who actually got innings, and there'll be some guys on there that you forgot even pitched for this team by the end of the year. Now you've got Feliz. You've picked up the 2 guys from San Diego. Jake Junis is relieved. You've had Strom. You've had, you know, Chris Young. It takes a whole bunch of people throughout the course of the season to be able to get you through 162 games and all those innings. You just hope that there's, you know, 2 or 3 starters that can get you 175 plus. And it's amazing how much that takes the heat off guys later in the season, because a lot of these guys, because they're not established guys, you know, haven't had to do the August and September in a pennant race where wins are more important and the pressure is a little bit more on you. That takes its toll a little bit, and that's a learning process. And to talk a little bit more about the Holland and the Davis thing, you know, Greg Holland coming off Tommy John, a whole bunch of teams. I don't even know if Colorado, you've seen, was in the mix. Who wants to go pitch in Colorado? Mm-hmm. But he's gone out there, and he's had a great year. I think the money he wanted a 2-year deal. I heard Dayton talk about it. Just didn't make sense at the time. Now you can look back and say, well, he's been great. You know, that's a mistake. But, there's 29 other teams that didn't do it either, other than Colorado. Wade Davis, at the time, you know what, I kind of like the trade. Solaire, a guy with some power, a young guy, controllable for a while. I wasn't 100% convinced that Wade Davis was healthy, and I don't know if Wade Davis knew whether he was healthy or not. So you make a trade, you get a guy to try to replace Dyson. At the time, you have to trust everything Dayton Moore's done because, you know, we do have a World Series title. He has made all the right moves. I was at an event probably 3 weeks ago. We did a little celebrity wiffle ball game for his See You in the Major League Foundation, and he admits that he failed this offseason. He's like, you know what, I'll take that. I tried to do some things. They didn't turn out, but that's the nature of the business. Here we are close to August, and you got to make do, and you got to keep getting better, and you got to, you know, next day is the next game, and we got to figure out how we can get better from this point forward, and that's all you need to worry about.
I'm glad you brought up Dayton, because Dayton is a terrific person, and he has led the Royals to World Series championship in 2015. And we were talking about it before we had you on the air, is that up to when they won the World Series, it seemed like every move Dayton Moore made turned the gold. I mean, you could think of Chris Young, Ryan Madsen, signing Justin Vargas, Irvin Santana, the trades, of course, were terrific. That really reshaped this organization. The scouting and development was really solid at the time. It seemed like everything that Dayton did, it turned to gold. Edison Volquez, Kendrys Morales, really good signings, help him win a World Series. And it's almost like he sold his soul to the devil. Because since the Royals won the World Series in 2015, Jamie, we were just going over this for about 25, 30 minutes, and I did a lot of research on this last night trying to figure out how did we get to where we are, especially with the bullpen and the pieces that they have. And I'm sitting here, and I can't come up. I honestly can't. Maybe you can help, because we all here, all three of us, couldn't come up with one. We can't think of one really good move that Dayton Moore has made since the Royals won the World Series. Now, granted, as you said, when he makes the moves at the time, half of us might agree that makes sense. Davis for Solaire, or, hey, that makes sense. Dyson for Carnes. But quite frankly, and you could say some of it is bad luck. I understand that. But you talk about terrible luck. I mean, every single thing he has done since they won the World Series in regards to contracts, lack of performance by those guys that they signed along contracts, guys they traded for who end up getting hurt, and then Solaire, who can't even beat out Jorge Bonifacio, all the moves he's made since 2015, and of course the one everybody points to is the Gordon contract, I'd still say the Candy contract's pretty big too, has kind of handcuffed this team.
You know, I think a little bit of that is just a regression to the norm. Mm-hmm. He did such a good job, and he created a monster with all the moves that he had made, you know, over the course of a year and a half going into 2015, all worked. And that's just not what normally happens, whether it's here, which is the only thing we pay attention to is here, nowhere else than Kansas City. Things are bound to go wrong. You know, I don't know what you can look at any trade that anybody does, and you just hope it's 50-50 either way, whether that helps the organization that got the people that they wanted or the other people that get the prospects. And you just hate it because, you know what? He did do such a good job, and everything did work, and that's what we got used to, and I kind of think it changed everybody's mindset that he can do no wrong. Dayton will admit it just like anybody else. He makes mistakes, and what looks good on paper sometimes doesn't translate to what turns out as great on the field. All that being said, I look at it as, wow, they drafted Whit Merrifield. He was a little bit of not a career minor leaguer, not to that degree, but who would have thought Whit Merrifield doing what he's doing? Nobody had talked about Bonifacio as a prospect or anything like that, but our player development guys, which he's in charge of, have done a great job, and he's been a great contributing major leaguer. And we've done things of that nature. And you look up right now with everything that's gone wrong, and we're only a half game out of the wild card spot, it's hard to make the playoffs, period. And we got a chance to make playoffs 3 out of 4 years, and I look at that as a good thing. Now, he's got to look at things. Not only do we want to try to make the playoffs this year, we don't want to completely fall flat on our face in 2018 and end up with nothing. I think a lot of people going into the trade deadline, we were struggling a little bit. He stood pat, went and got a couple guys from San Diego, didn't trade Moose, didn't trade Hosmer, didn't trade Kane. Escobar's still around. Man, this is the last opportunity for all of those guys to stay together, and I think he realized that. We're close enough that if we put a run together, we got a chance to get back into the playoffs, and everybody knows that all you got to do is get into the playoffs, and everybody's got a chance. If you don't get in the playoffs, you don't have a chance, period. And we'll see how this all shakes out later on. I feel bad because some of the moves haven't made it. But kudos to those guys that are on the field every single day, grinding it out. We're 120 games in. When we're a half game out of the wild card race, and we're still talking about chances of being in the postseason, and we're still excited about Royals baseball.
Jamie Bluma is our guest today talking Royals baseball with us on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. So what you're basically telling me here is that Dayton Moore is like this year's Royals. He was on a long winning streak, and he was red hot. And then since 15 is in this really long cold spell, and things have not gone the way that he would have liked. I want to talk about the future for a moment before we get back to this year's team. And that is, I don't know how far you've thought ahead to next year. And granted, you want to enjoy the ride that you have now. And this is a team that, let's be honest, they are really hot, they're really cold. And Bill Parcells said, you are what your record is. And the Royals are a couple games over 500, which is an average team as a whole. They've shown flashes where they're great. They've seen flashes where they're not very good. But when I try to look ahead to next year, of course, a lot of this depends on if the Royals will spend the money and can they offer Hosmer and Moustakas or keep those guys, maybe one of them, maybe Kane comes back. But as you mentioned, Dayton Moore has to think about the future as well. And some people believe that he's mortgaging the future to go ahead for one last, all the chips are in the middle of the table, go for it for a World Series, which I understand Ryan Lafever's been on before. He says, if you got a chance to make the playoffs and a chance to win it, how do you not go ahead and try to grab it? But if it doesn't work, as we know with trades, they work or they don't work, then you could pay the piper down the line. I'll go back to the Zobrist-Cueto trades. If the Royals don't win the World Series, those trades probably aren't so good. They win the World Series. They're paying for that lack of amount of players and prospects in the minors now, but it was worth it. They won a World Series. You went and you grabbed it. You don't know how good prospects are going to become. But have you looked ahead to next year a little bit to think about the makeup of this team and how far this team could maybe fall or maybe surprisingly be respectable and maybe be a 500 team?
Well, you know what? Not as much as I probably should have, because you kind of want to live in the present. Sure. You got this bunch of guys that we're going to enjoy, and it's most of the World Series guys. It's amazing how much roster change. If you look at the roster today, the 25-man versus the 25-man of the World Series, and I would say more than half probably aren't here, but you have those core guys in Salvi and Escobar and Moose and Hosmer, Kane, Gordon, and that's your core guys. So everybody, those guys are on the field every single day. The pitching staff's changed. We flipped it over. That's just the nature of the business a little bit. What I do a little bit is I like to look back to 2014, because I think if we don't end up coming back against Oakland, and it's ironic we just played Oakland, If we don't come back and beat Oakland in that wild card game against John Lester, I think there's a pretty good chance that Ned Yost gets fired.
Yeah.
And they got to make some changes. So to look back a little bit and see, What an amazing game that was. I go back and watch it every 6 months or so just to relive that a little bit, and to see that where we've been since that game and what he's been able to accomplish as an organization after not getting anywhere for 29 years. And you really appreciate what he's done and how hard it is to get to the playoffs. You look at San Francisco. They would have thought going into this year, hey, we're gonna be a pretty good contending team. We've added some pieces. And they're a mess, and they're not going to make it to the playoffs this year. And they're going to—it is what it is. It's the nature of the beast. Unfortunately, we were unique as a city, and we had to wait 28, 29 years to get back into the playoffs. I don't think it's going to get to the point where we're ever that bad again. He's going to do a great job, and I'm sure when he does pass on the reins to somebody else, you see what a baseball town this is, and how much it changed this entire community. What's happened. And we've created a little bit of a monster because of that. Fans have a different expectation of this team, and I don't think that should change from a standpoint of we want to see a winner on the field, or at least a team. We want to be better than 500, but you want that kind of that 81 win number. You want to stay there and stay above 500 and be relevant. Now, this is a year where, you know what, nobody else has been very good in the league either. So a few wins over 500, it looks like, is going to give you at least one spot in the wild card. Do you imagine if you're in the National League right now and if you were either somebody other than Colorado or Arizona happened to be behind the Dodgers,
yeah,
and you end up over 500 and you're 10 games out of a wild card spot, because that's how it shook out in the National League this year. So we're lucky we're in a situation we are, that nobody else has been very good. Cleveland until recently wasn't playing very good either, until we both had long winning streaks. So, you know what, I try to look at this year, let's enjoy it, let's see what we can do out of this. Hopefully we make it to the playoffs, and then I think you're going to see, you know, a completely different team next year. I think we're going to try to re-sign, you know, maybe two of those four guys, of Kane, Hosmer, Moustakas, and Escobar, and see what happens, and hope as Gordon has a bounce back year. But we're going to have some growing pains next year. We're going to have some stuff to figure out, and when you do have an opportunity to get to the playoffs, I think you most definitely have to take advantage of that.
Okay, a couple more questions before off the wall, before we let you go. We're talking Jamie Bluma, former Royal, and always love having him on a show. Great dude. Ned Yost, you mentioned that if the Royals lose that wild card game, I was there at the wild card game, the fans are booing, some people chanting fire Ned after he put in Yordano in that wild card game. And ironically enough, Brandon Moss was the one to hit that huge home run, and the Royals came back and won that game. What about Ned? You know, we hear all about the free agents that the Royals may or may not re-sign at the end of the year. They might sign one or two. Maybe they're all going to walk. Maybe they're all going to get big contracts. And a lot of people think next year is going to be a bit of a rebuild. What about Ned Yost? I mean, this is a guy that World Series back-to-back years. Last year, you know, they were competitive. And if not for the Kane injury, maybe they could have snuck in. This year, they're right there, as you mentioned. Do you think it's possible that Ned Yost will hang it up and step away from this job after these core players finish out their final year in Kansas City?
I don't know if he has another year left on his contract or not. Do you know that?
I think he does. I think he had an extension recently.
So I see Ned from a standpoint of he's a loyal guy that he'll play out his contract. But also, it wouldn't shock me if, depending on what does happen this year, maybe we make another playoff run, maybe we don't. And he evaluates, you know, where he's at in his life and his career and what he wants to do moving forward. It wouldn't shock me if he retired. So I think that's something that you got to kind of brace for a little bit. I think they have a great staff underneath him with Rusty Koontz and Lakmatu and that old guy, Mike Gershley. So you can see maybe one of those guys taking the reins with guys that are used to. But it's also going to be a bit of a different team next year with some newer blood and some different guys that we're not even talking about right now that'll have a chance to contribute. I know at this point last year we weren't talking about Whit Merrifield much, and I know for sure we weren't talking about Bonifacio. So that's the fun part for me. There's always different guys, and there has been over the last couple of years. It seemed like 14, 15. You know what? With the same guys, those guys in AAA, I feel for them because they weren't going anywhere, and they've grinded it out. They've done a great job, and they've got an opportunity to walk into a great organization at the big league level and continue the excellence we've had over the last 3 years and be part of the winning team. And you got a lot of those guys that want to be starters and full-time contributors next year with Bonifacio, with Merrifield, with Jake Junis, with some of the other guys that are cutting their teeth in that bullpen. So I think a lot of guys got, you know, get the feeling of what it is to be royal, as their saying goes, and I like what we have moving forward.
Ned is signed through next year, so he has one more season on his contract after this year, and then he would be up for, well, renewal or negotiate an extension maybe in this offseason, or just go ahead and let him play it through next year, or maybe step away, as we both were talking about. Big series with Cleveland. They get the day off. The Royals do. They're 5.5 back behind Cleveland. Cleveland's playing some good ball. They were postponed yesterday. The Royals have 10 games against the Indians the rest of the way, Jamie. Six of those are at home. And this is a huge stretch for the Royals against some really good teams. Three games at home against Cleveland, starting tomorrow night, and they get Kluber, as you mentioned. That won't be easy. Then they get an off day. Three games at home against the Rockies, who, if the Rockies were in the Royals division, they'd be in first place. Then three at Cleveland, and then three at home against Tampa Bay, a team that the Royals are trying to hold off for a wild card spot. Is it safe to say, or is it an overreaction, that this stretch I just referred to is going to make or break this team and whether or not they make the playoffs as we head into September?
I don't think it'll make it, or I don't think it'll break us, but I think it can certainly help. I mean, we've got to take care of business against the teams that are ahead of the wild card. That's why it's frustrating when we lose a game like that to Oakland, which is not in the hunt. That's a team that we need to beat. I know we're on the road, but every win matters at this point. Colorado's been a tough team. We need to take care of business at home. We got to win two out of three at least against Cleveland. If we don't, then we're just losing ground every single day. And I've said this, I don't know if I've said it on this show, but it's just about winning series. You got to just stay above water, win series. You know, even if it's 2-1, four-game series are always tough, but we don't have too many of those coming up. But just keep winning series, and I think you put yourself in a good position with the rest of the way the schedule shakes out. You just can't go through a tough stretch like we just did. I mean, in another 3-7 stretch, I think is going to be really tough. So just keep your head above water, you know, keep winning series, and I'm going to like our chances right down at the end. Because this team has shown the uncanny knack to be able to turn it up and get things done when they need to, and that can be hard to do, but this team has proven it over and over again. That they have that ability to get stuff done when it matters.
Jamie Blumar, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs. Final question, our off-the-wall question. Jamie, are you ready?
I'm always ready.
All right, buddy. So here's your question. I let my oldest son watch Major League for the first time the other night.
How old
is he? He's 11. Don't hold it against me. I will say, though, that it's rated R. 16 Candles is rated PG. There's nudity in 16 Candles, and it's rated PG, and Major League has a lot of F-bomb. What's that?
16 Candles was 20 years before Major League.
20 years before Major League. Now you're exaggerating just a hair. But Molly Ringwald is very young in that movie. I will give you that. So anyway, we watch Major League, and there's a lot of the F-bomb stuff, which is not good. And I try to tell my son, hey, don't do that. But I'm sure when he gets older, he'll probably will like his dad. And so anyway, we're watching this movie. And of course, Serrano, gets a bucket of chicken. He needs a bucket of chicken before the big game. So my question to you, all of us radio guys are freeloaders, I must say. We like to eat, especially if it's free. I met you for the very first time around a whole bunch of food at a tailgate. I think it was before game one of the World Series against the Mets. So my question to you is, when you were a player, did you have a routine or ritual where you had to eat something particular, like every game, or was there something that you thought if you ate that, it would bring you good luck? Were you superstitious? What type of food was involved in that?
You know what, I wasn't. From a food standpoint, we didn't, minor league guys with your $20 a day meal money and peanut butter and jelly and cold cut sandwiches in the clubhouse are pretty key. Everybody likes free food. I don't care where you've been, what you're doing. That's kind of the reason we have the food we do at the tailgate. It's just, you know what, you come and enjoy, and if you can have a free meal, you know what, pay it forward and do it for somebody else. I will tell you this, to this day, even when I make myself a nice little ham sandwich or turkey sandwich at home, you know, with the little cheese on there, I will put chips on my sandwich. Not next to it on the plate, I still put chips on the sandwich because you never know how much time you do have to eat a meal when you're in the minor leagues, or if you got there 20 minutes after the first wave of people get to the ballpark, then there weren't any cold cuts left, and there certainly weren't any chips left. So you got to kind of put it all in one sandwich, smash the chips on there with it. But I wasn't like Wade Boggs was very notorious for eating chicken before every game. I know my first year in Eugene, Oregon, if you remember the Safeway grocery stores, we would go walk to the – we didn't even have a car. We could walk to Safeway, and we would get all the leftover – corn dogs and whatever was left at the end of the day, I think, was 50 cents. So anytime we were able to get to a place where you could get cheap food, that way you had more money for cheap beer, then that was a good thing.
So nobody sacrificed a live chicken is what you're telling me.
We didn't ever, no crazy stories. I know in a couple places that in the minor leagues, when they had leftover food in the concession stand, they might bring it down to the clubhouse, so you would actually have a somewhat of a post-game spread before you left the clubhouse instead of having to figure out where you're going to grab something on the way home. So that was always kind of nice. I know in Eugene it was hot dogs, and there's plenty of that, or nachos, or you know, any of the things left over at the ballpark. You always appreciated being able to get a little something else in your stomach that didn't cost you very much.
My crack staff, his name is Chad, to my left, looked up when 16 Candles came out and Major League. You were very close. They were 5 years apart.
Oh, not 20. Not 20? Oh, God, man, my years are getting away from me. I was laughing about 16 Candles, and I referenced something along those lines in a lesson the other day, and I had a kid look at me like, what in the hell are you talking about? But the parent was laughing, so it was funny. I said yesterday in a lesson, something about a yardstick, like put a yardstick down for a straight line. And the kid's like, oh, what? Like, what's a yardstick? And then I think I said broken record because I told the kid to do the same thing over and over and over again. And I said broken record, and another blank look from a child that doesn't even know what a broken record is. Can't say scratch CD because a lot of kids don't even know what those are because everything's now podcast or on an iPod or iPad. So I'm starting to show my age a little bit. Actually, want to tell you guys, I'm leaving tomorrow morning, headed to Berlin, Germany, to do some camps in Berlin, Germany, and Brussels, Belgium.
Cool.
So I'll be overseas for the next 10 days, starting tomorrow, doing some camps with USSSA International and World Baseball Softball Confederation, WBSC. This will be my ninth year to get a chance and go spread this beautiful game of baseball around the globe.
Well, you do a wonderful job in everything you do. You're a wonderful guy to talk to. And safe travels to overseas. Make it back safely. Have fun over there. And thanks again so much for the time. Always enjoy talking with you, Jamie.
Anytime, brother. And if we do happen to make it to the playoffs, you can plan on another one of those tailgates.
That sounds like a plan. I love free food, as does everybody. Jamie Blumar, guest today on Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs.